Girl, I've been dying to tell you this.
What?
I've got some bad news for the Broadway community.
What's going on?
My dear friend Matt Doyle has met a man.
Okay.
He's going home to with the man to visit the man's family for the first time.
Wonderful.
Would you like to know where the man's family lives?
Yeah.
Monaco.
Oh, no!
He's going to Monaco!
The safest, unsafe place in the world!
Matt, we can't lose you. We need you.
Well, you know what? Props for not being a billionaire, so yeah. I think you'll be fine.
We don't actually know. Matt's going to do some recon and find out. It could be. We don't know.
Okay, please report back. Now I'm really worried.
Maddie, we love you. Hi, Julia Bezzavalli.
Hello, Patrick Hines.
Girl, I already forgot what we're supposed to say.
Facebook and Patreon,
okay.
I think, right?
We have a Facebook group, fam, and you should join it. There's 60,000 people in there, and it's really fun. It's where you go to, make new friends, talk about the episodes, talk about your dogs, talk about your whatever.
Talk about whatever the hell you want.
There's a dog in our episode today.
I know, JJ.
JJ, he gets a whole, he doesn't get screen time, but he does get mentioned.
Best nose on the force.
Yeah, yeah, and the Patreon, we're supposed to say.
Yes, on Patreon, because that's where you get ad-free versions of the episodes on the regular feed, and that's where we do all the series.
Right now, we're doing Trophy Wife from Hulu. It is wild.
It's so crazy.
It is really. And then next we're doing Don't Date Brandon.
Don't Date Brandon.
You know that I'm really feeling these love scam things.
So this guy is a fucking psychopath.
Diabolical.
I mean,
oh my God, I told you I saw a TikTok from this documentary that I just thought was I didn't realize it was from this.
I know.
It is absolutely wild, fam.
So
go to the show notes, click there if you'd like to join us over on the Patreon.
Yep.
What are we talking about today?
This is Kidnapped, Elizabeth Smart. This is on Netflix, and it's pretty excellent, but also very harrowing.
Elizabeth Smart was a 14-year-old girl. The family said she'd been taken from her bedroom in the middle of the night.
I saw this cut screen, and the window was wide open. My wife screamed, "Call 911.
Elizabeth was living a very normal life in a very nice neighborhood.
Our community had mobilized. Everybody was willing to just drop what they were doing and search.
We love you. We want you to come home safely to us.
This case captivated the nation. There was a sense of, is it the family? Could he be involved?
My wife said, "Law enforcement, don't believe that you're telling the truth." I had nothing to do with this.
There's so little evidence to go on, but there was a witness to the kidnapping, her 9-year-old sister, Mary Catherine.
I knew I'd heard the voice. I just couldn't remember where I'd heard it from. I just wanted to tell them I'm still alive.
We open with some on-screen text. It's 2002. 14-year-old Elizabeth Smart was abducted from her bedroom as she slept. The only witness was this goddamn hero of a little girl, 9-year-old sister, Mary Catherine. And Mary Catherine, this is all in the cold open of the documentary, but she's says to the producer, "You're asking me how I dealt with it. I think I still deal with
it." Of course.
And everybody in this family will.
Yeah. And everyone, for the most part, is in the doc. Elizabeth Smart is here. Mary Catherine, her sister, they look so much alike.
They're indistinguishable, actually.
I know.
Yeah.
Her dad, her uncle, should probably not be in front of a camera ever, but here we are.
There's a couple uncles here. One is great. One is insane.
Insane.
I'll just say he's insane.
It's just, okay, we'll get there.
Make a bad situation 100 times
just
worse.
Just stop giving him a microphone.
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
June 5th, 2002, Mary Catherine tells us what happened because it happened in her bedroom with her and Elizabeth shared a room.
Yeah.
That night, Elizabeth and I said our prayers together and we went to sleep. And the next thing I remember, there was a man in my bedroom telling Elizabeth if she screamed, he would kill her.
If she screamed, that he would kill her.
Yeah, Mary Catherine said she was paralyzed.
She's 9 years old, obviously.
I mean, this is the thing that literal nightmares are made of. This is the thing that every person, child or adult, fears is going to happen to them. It sounds fake. It sounds like a made-up story because it is so the definition of a nightmare.
And I think the reasoning for that, one of the many reasons, is this happened when everyone was home safe in the house. This is when something bad happens out there, you wish they were here.
Yes,
And I think that's why it was so jarring to so many people. Like, she was safe in bed. That's where you're supposed to be, right?
It doesn't make any sense. And so Mary Catherine finally says that she worked up the courage to go, like, get her parents. And they wake her up, and it's like, I would probably have this reaction, too. The dad is like, listen, like, she's here. Like, you were dreaming, whatever. The dad takes a moment to, like, before we get his story, to say, like, as a dad, your only job is to keep your kids safe, and I didn't do that. And it's like,
well,
sir,
I mean, I'm not saying, I'm saying, no, I hear what you're saying, but like, that's,
I mean,
not.
But this is what I mean. Like, these people, none of them will ever, this will always live in their soul somewhere.
And no one expects this to happen. So yeah. It's not that crazy for the dad to be like, wait, are you okay? To like need a minute to catch up to what's happening, because no one is ever expecting this to happen.
No, it's 3:58 a.m. They search the house. Elizabeth is not there. And like, all of a sudden,
in the kitchen, I saw this cut screen, and the window was wide open. My wife screamed, call 911.
The window is wide open. His wife, the mom, screams and calls 911. This is what nightmares are.
That's when everything comes crashing down.
Yeah.
When they realize, like, oh, wait a second.
Yeah.
So they also see, though, that someone put a chair against the wall so that they can climb in the window, and then left the chair there.
Yeah.
Which is so chilling to see this, like, blatant evidence of someone climbing into your home.
I don't even know what, like, as a parent, I don't know what to say about this, because it's like, this could happen to anybody.
And also, I always thought that the guy came in through the bedroom window.
So did I.
I didn't know that he was like in their house for longer than I thought they were.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
We live in an apartment. So like, to get into our apartment, you'd have to like get in the front door somehow and then get into, like, we feel pretty safe in that way. But like, this was a very hard documentary for me
it's
to watch.
Tough. It's tough.
Very, very hard.
Very tough.
And it's almost one of those things where, like, this was so easy. How does this not happen every day?
Not anymore, I guess, with everyone has a camera on every, you know.
I guess. I mean, we're going to learn later that the alarm was not turned on that night. I bet that happens all the time.
Unless you're my dad.
Unless you're your
dad. Who locks the door. Well, I have to say, Dad, we're taking the dogs for a walk. Please don't lock us out. It's Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
Yeah.
Like, we have to actually make a point to be like, Dad,
I'm sleeping at your parents' house until further notice.
I know.
Girl, Shopify is back. Look, we know better than anybody that starting something is really freaking hard, but it becomes so much easier when you have a great partner like Shopify, who we've been using for forever.
Right. So in case you don't know, Shopify is the commerce platform behind millions of businesses around the world and 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S.
And they make it super simple. You can get started with your own design studio. They've got hundreds of ready-to-use templates. Shopify helps you build beautiful online stores that match your brand's style. That is key. Like, having a partner that helps you do that makes the job so much easier.
Yeah. Like, what if you're sitting here and you're like, yeah, but no one knows about my brand. Like, right. No one's heard of me.
What do we do?
Okay. Well, Shopify helps you find your customers with easy-to-run email and social media campaigns. They got you.
And look, if you get stuck like I always do, they've got the most amazing award-winning 24/7 customer support. I would be nothing without it.
Yeah, because if you're doing something like this, chances are it's not a 9-to-5 thing. Maybe, and especially when you're starting out, you're like, I need help at 2 a.m. Guess what? Yeah,
exactly. It's a 2 a.m. to 9 a.m. to 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. thing.
Exactly. You Shopify know what I mean? Is there.
So fam, it's time to turn those what-ifs into... with Shopify today.
Sign up for your $1 per month trial today at shopify.com/obsessed.
Go to shopify.com/obsessed.
That's shopify.com/obsessed. Ooh.
Cha-ching.
Good sound. Nisha DeGaring is here. She's a reporter. And she says what everyone's thinking, like saying the words, a girl was taken from her bedroom in the middle of the night was surreal as she was reporting on it. She couldn't believe what she was saying.
Especially because they come from like one of the ritziest areas of Salt Lake City.
The homes are gorgeous. The Mormon church is interwoven into the community. You wouldn't think crime happens here. And I remember thinking, is this a real kidnapping?
I don't blame everybody involved for being like, this isn't real. This is fake.
Well, for a moment, I mean, in that, like, the worst kind of surreal, but like, obviously, I mean, she's not there. Where did she go? Something horrible.
No, I actually looked it up. I guess I should probably be a better true crime podcaster and know this off the top of my head, but like, the JonBenet Ramsey case was 96. Mm-hmm. This is 2002. It wasn't so, I think that there is some of the way the family is treated, I think, is a little bit in response to the JonBenet Ramsey case, because the families are so similar. Even like the locales are similar. And so I think that's part of it, but like, I don't think anybody is crazy to look around and be like, there's no way this happened like this.
No one wants to believe. It's one of those things where no one wants to believe it.
Yeah.
And saying it out loud just doesn't make any sense. Like, how does this work?
No. So we meet Dave Smart, who's one of Ed's brothers. And, you know, Ed calls him and says, I need your help. And, like, he just describes getting to the house. And, like, his brother looks like he was put through a meat grinder, he says. Mom, the mom is, like, he describes the blood-curdling sobs coming out of her.
Like, these guttural, like, what do you even, you're not even thinking. She probably doesn't even remember it.
No. As a parent, every time we cover one of these, like, missing kid situations, when your kid is, all you can imagine on a loop in your head is the absolute worst case scenario of what they're going through.
Right.
You know?
Right. So Elizabeth has been missing for 8 hours.
Right from the get-go, we set up a phone room to take tips. The number of leads that came in from the public numbered about 40,000.
And so we assembled a team of hundreds of investigators.
They had hundreds of investigators on the case. The entire nation was watching this. And this is where you really see the disparity between this case and others. Like, a pretty blonde white girl in the Beverly Hills area of, like, super white Salt Lake City, she's going to get all the attention.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what's going to happen.
One moment of levity. We meet Corden Sparks. He's an investigator. He's the me of this documentary because he's, like, getting set up for his interview. And he's like,
well, no matter how much lipstick you put on this pig, I'm not going to look any better.
Corden. Yeah. He's like, yeah, Elizabeth was a typical 14-year-old devout Mormon, no shady associations. I'm like, yeah, I don't think she's like the drug dealer running with the cartel in Utah. Like,
that would have been a shock. That would have been so. Although, then this kidnapping would have made more sense.
Like,
you know what I mean?
No shady associations.
I know.
She's not allowed to do anything, and she's shamed for everything she does, thanks to them.
I know.
We're going to get into that a lot.
You're absolutely right.
If this
right.
doesn't apply to you, fucking great. But there is a lot of shit that goes on in the Mormon church that is swept under the rug and that is perpetuated, that is evil.
You know, can I also just say, though, I do think that, like, one of the things I wanted to say at some point in here is how I think Elizabeth Smart is so generous to be sharing her story. She's so brave to do it. The moment where, I mean, we all know that Elizabeth Smart is alive. It's not a reveal. So, you know, the moment we meet her, she, like, takes a breath and then she tells the story for the 9 millionth time.
Yeah.
But I do think that one of the lessons to take away from this documentary is don't fucking do that to your kids.
Don't do that to your kids.
As told to one of the kids it was done to. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And I think that that's like I just hope that that's a good thing to come of this.
A good takeaway.
Yeah.
That people, I mean, hopefully.
Yeah.
So by 4:30 p.m., the entire community is involved. We have signs, posters, search parties. Someone's like, do any of you know CPR or rock climbing?
Daisy would have been like, I can do it.
And at first I'm like, rock climbing. And then when I realize that they're surrounded by like, oh, that's actually incredibly valuable.
And like exactly where they went.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I was like, oh, yeah, of course. Obviously, they're asking for rock climbing.
Yeah.
But my dumb idiot self was like, that's interesting, obviously.
Salt Lake City is wild. Like, we'll get there later when we meet the party animal of Salt Lake City. But like, you know, we've got a really active TCO group in Salt Lake City. And hi, everyone. Hi, Suze. Hi,
team. Everybody.
Salt Lake City is amazing because it's
looks beautiful.
It's gorgeous. It's like outdoorsy people who like to go on the hikes and all of that.
Sure.
But they also like, you know, there's a lot of religious stuff there. It, like, Salt Lake City is such an interesting place.
Yeah. So the Smart family lived in this home and community for several years.
Yeah.
They had 6 kids, 4 boys and 2 girls. Elizabeth and Mary Catherine are the only ones in the doc. Lois, the mom, is in here, and the brothers aren't here.
Yeah.
We'll get into Lois maybe at the end.
You know, and my thing on that, too, is, like, I get it. Something like this must do crazy things to the family.
Yeah. I mean, we say it all the time. I can't believe they're able to sit down and say, you know, things in work. Like, Elizabeth, from Elizabeth to her dad to everyone, I'm always like, I don't know if I could do it.
No, and this is worth having this conversation for a second because the family dynamic is never discussed in this documentary. We know that Elizabeth's dad has come out of the closet. He's gay.
And has left the church.
And has left the church. And obviously the parents aren't together anymore. So like adding that to like the trauma of this and turn a camera on any family and it's like there's going to be some kind of chaos underneath.
Yeah. Let me just say, in case you don't know, that was kind of maybe a big like moment for you to learn, dear listener. But like, they got divorced in 2019 after 34 years of marriage, Ed and Lois, and Ed came out as gay. Like, they filed in July, and then, like, by December, like, he apologized to Lois. He wrote this, like, really, I think, beautiful statement being like, this is impossible. I totally get it.
Yeah.
But like, according to the internet, like people.com, for whatever, take that with however much salt you want. Like, that's why they're not speaking. So if you don't know that, and this is not in the documentary because it's not about this.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, that is the family dynamic that you're mentioning, just in case you didn't know listener.
Thank you for that research. And I think that it is important to talk about the family dynamic because it's like, we are being given like the frontest of front row seats to this family, but as told by only 3 of them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So Elizabeth and her sister Mary Catherine were competitive.
Elizabeth, you know, she was first daughter.
She was fiercely competitive.
especially with her brothers. As far as, you know, her inner strength, she just really had a very strong spirit.
She was a competitive with her brothers, especially.
Yes.
She's the eldest daughter, Taylor.
And I love, too, because I think about this all the time, because as a parent, you can only ever imagine the worst case scenario. Like, I think the dad takes solace in knowing that Elizabeth has a very strong, tough character in a moment like this.
Yeah, and, like, to know that about your kid at 14 is pretty cool.
Yes, for sure.
You know, she had a very strong spirit. She played the harp. We see footage of her at a concert or a recital or something. It's very cool that she's just, like, an incredibly well-rounded kid.
Yeah.
June 6th, she could also be the biggest fucking drip on the planet, and this is still a harrowing story.
Oh my
God. I'm just saying,
I know.
She could have been the worst,
I know.
But like,
yeah.
Whatever. She could have been a fucking brat. She's not.
Totally.
But she also could have been.
Anything else she could have been, girl?
That would have been okay. You know, like,
that
would have been fine if the family was like, she was kind of difficult.
She sucked, but this still happened to her.
This is not what people would have been saying about me at 14. No way.
You've met my daughter.
Do you know what I mean?
You know what I mean?
So June 6th, it's day two. The media is all over it. Obviously.
We should mention a reward of $250,000 has been announced.
Now, Mary Catherine, her sister, is 9 years old. She's the only witness. And Mary Catherine is here to tell us about what that was like for her because she's terrified. She's traumatized. She feels guilty.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the thing is, like, she was, and I understand why they kept her away from talking to anybody else because they didn't want her to get any information that could possibly interfere with her memory of what happened.
There's just so much pressure on her, but they're also skeptical because she's a traumatized 9-year-old. So
yes.
They want it every single way they can. You
yes.
can't have it all. Cops,
yeah.
Which I will get into later. But like Mary Catherine can't win. And even as a 9-year-old, she knows that.
And like nobody tells us anything about like mental health services that were being offered to her
for
at
her.
The time. I know. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Because we see video of her first interview with police and she says,
guys, quiet. If you scream, I'll come and shoot you. But if you don't, I won't scream.
Did his voice sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
Can you tell me where you've heard that before?
No, I can't remember.
She also says, which is a very big deal, the voice was familiar to her.
Yes.
She knew who this person was, and she can't place who it is or where she heard the voice, but she knows she heard it before.
Like, she's 9 years old, and she is going to be the most reliable narrator we've ever met.
And guess what? Nobody believes her.
And nobody believes her.
So the police start with the family, which is what they should do.
Yes.
Here's the thing. The Smart family is enormous.
Yeah.
We see a photo of 50 people.
Mormon families usually are.
And, like, there are more little kids than adults, and they, look, I'm just going to... If I'm an investigator in this situation, they are a big Mormon family with a lot of kids. Based on what we know about like Warren Jeffs and the fundamentalists,
yeah, yeah.
I'd be interested in the family too. You should be interested in the family first anyway. And then you're like, oh, there's 50 of them?
And we
Holy
understand
shit.
That the fundamentalists and the Mormons are not the same thing. But
That's right.
But I understand what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. But you got to, this looks insane.
Like,
this looks like an inside job. This looks so like the movie of the week version of a kidnapping that it had to be staged.
Right.
Is what I would be thinking as a cop.
And there are two, like, you always start with the people closest.
Yes.
And unfortunately, in this situation, there's about 40 people to question. That's a lot of time. I am not defending the cops here because the cops in this case failed Elizabeth miserably.
Yes.
However, at first, I'm like, I'd be interested in all of these people, too, who look exactly like a photo that we covered in our fucking Warren Jeffs coverage.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it looks like.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
I absolutely agree. And this is where Cody the cop is saying, like, the alarm was inadvertently left off, so that doesn't look good for the family.
And the window. When I looked at it the first morning, there were no scuff marks on the outside wall. Even if you step up on a chair, you're going to make a scuff mark. I did not see any. My initial assessment was maybe this wasn't the point of entry. Maybe it was a staged one.
If you're going to climb in through the window, there probably would have been scuff marks.
Would there have been, though?
I don't know. I mean...
I'm just wondering, like, how messy of a climber are you that
right.
there are now scuff... You just, it's like a step.
It's a first floor window. It's not like you're climbing
it's
into...
the kitchen.
Yeah.
It wasn't the bedroom, which I always thought it was.
I feel like what's not being said is maybe they're working backwards, trying to, like, prove their theory that this is an inside job.
Yeah.
So they search the home. They're looking for any indication that harm fell to Elizabeth in the house. Like, is there a body in that house somewhere? And that was when I was like, oh... Everyone's reeling from JonBenet. Like, that's what these cops are thinking. thing.
So they bring in JJ. They say, we have a really good bloodhound on the force. We had a lot of confidence in him. And they bring in JJ, and JJ's like, look, Elizabeth is not in the house.
No.
He says very clearly, Elizabeth is not here.
Yeah.
And JJ follows the scent out of the house through the surrounding woods and eventually loses the scent. And we don't get any information about why or how far away from the house or anything like that, but
because
JJ did his best.
They say that it seems like she was like taken in a car, but that doesn't really make any sense.
And we know eventually, that that's not what happened.
Right.
So I don't know what happened here.
Yeah. Girl, Ernan is back. This is about taking the power back. This is about getting your money when you want it.
Yeah, so Ernan is an app that lets you access your pay as you earn it. Like you were saying, up to $150 a day with a max of $1,000 between paydays.
Yeah, Ernan's mission is to make financial momentum accessible to anybody. Their whole thing is it's your money and you get to put it in your hands with Ernan.
Yeah, just download the Ernan app and add your info. Then you can start accessing your pay as you work and leave an optional tip to help keep the app running for everyone. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck.
Yeah. So fam, do it. Download Earnin today. It's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N in Google Play or Apple App Store.
When you download the Earnin app, type in True Crime Obsessed under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show.
That's True Crime Obsessed under podcast, fam.
Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank.
Access limits are based on your earnings and risk factors. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees.
Expedited transfers available for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service.
Available in select states. Terms and restrictions apply. Visit earnin.com for full details.
Download Earnin now and take control of your pay.
Because you're the boss.
Everyone wants to know if the family did it. And we get these clips of Ed Smart, the dad, pleading with the public, asking for help, doing the talk show circuit, like everything
yes.
you're quote supposed to do.
Ed and Lois Smart, I think initially you felt their grief, but it definitely shifted.
People would watch Ed on TV when he was talking, and they would make statements like, there are no tears when he's crying.
There was a sense of, is he telling us everything?
And after 2 days, everyone's like, he's not sad the way we want him to be sad. I don't like this.
Yeah.
Like, there are no answers, so they are just looking at Ed because he's the face of this thing.
In fairness, I will say, because we've called other people out on it in the past, like, he is crying without tears a lot.
I do want to say something because this is so well done because we see Ed on TV in 2002.
Yeah.
And he's looking down. And then we cut to him for the doc and he's also looking down.
Yeah.
And it's very, very effective because we know now, of course, he did not do this.
Of course, yeah.
And it made me really stop and like really sit with what I do for a living. It's so easy to say shit and like have ideas and theories safe in this little booth
yeah.
with zero connection to anything.
Yeah.
And like that really made me go, oh, like,
explain that more. What do you mean?
Like, people were just like, I don't like Ed. I don't like the way that looks. That's what we do.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times yeah. with zero connection to anything in some way. So it
Except
made me.
That you and I usually know the ending, I will say.
Yeah.
You know?
There was just that, the way they did that with like him in 2002 and on footage,
yeah.
him facing down and then cut to him today facing down and him looking up, it
yeah.
was very effective.
Well, they do it again in a minute.
Which I was definitely like, going to slow down on too.
Yeah.
But like, it just made me think, like, we all talk a lot of shit
yeah.
without being connected to anything. And, like, emotions get the best of us and everyone's worried and there's no information. So let's look at the guy who's the face of the operation.
Oh, totally. And I will also say, and this is no slight to her, like, you do it however you want to do it. And maybe we're only seeing the footage of the dad because he's in the dock and the mom isn't. But we're not seeing the mom
sure.
much in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Right? But the thing is, the dad, because they're looking at him so strongly.
And my father said, if you don't calm down, I'm going to commit you. So he took me over to the hospital and put me in the psychiatric ward, and I cried that whole night.
And his own dad has him committed to a psychiatric ward for
the
night.
He has like a physical, he can't take it. He says it was horrendous.
They committed the wrong brother.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And he's like, I'm already going through, he uses the word horrendous, this horrendous thing my daughter is missing. And now I'm a suspect. Like he couldn't
yeah.
handle it. And I don't blame him.
I think about this all the time. Like if Daisy were to go missing or Steve or anything like that, I would go to the cops and be like, I'm here with my attorney. I know you have to clear me. What do you need to know? Like,
with
let's
your lawyer,
get that part done.
Please.
Yes,
the lawyer
100%.
Is imperative.
Yeah.
So it's day 6 and they're quote, looking into the family, which just means that everyone is taking polygraph tests. That's not investigating.
Yeah.
And today, the reporter today in the year of 2026 is sitting down saying, is failing a polygraph suspicious? Absolutely. Keep it up. And I'm like, this is not investigating.
No.
I know there's 50 of them, but you got to do a little bit of work if we're going to do the work.
Yeah.
That's not investigating. That's not looking into the family, just giving everyone polygraphs. What are we doing?
And the other thing too that we should say is that like the community has totally mobilized. Like everyone is out looking for her, but the longer they look at the family, the fewer people show up to volunteer.
Well, that's the thing.
Because everyone is starting to think the family did it. And like the brothers aren't helping.
So, and I do want to say, I know that they're doing this polygraph in 2002, but the statement in 2026 to be like, oh, that's super suspicious. No, yeah. It's also not investigating.
I know.
Tom is not helping anything at all. He's Ed's
brother. Oh my God.
He's very jittery. He's described as being a little bit on the edge of things and always getting into trouble.
He's just like on all these TV shows, just like say making everything worse.
For whatever reason, they just keep putting him in front of cameras and handing him a microphone. And he's repeatedly said, like, get him away from the cameras. Why is he even sitting down for a televised interview?
I said, not since Amanda Knox have we wanted to say, sit down and be quiet.
He on CNN
says,
the person who did this, these are all quotes. I read the transcript. It's right there for you to see.
Yeah.
And they play it.
I believe that this person is not a bad person at all. And just and our family has felt strongly for a while, and there's been a comfort here for a while, that this is just somebody who actually likes Elizabeth. We all have issues. This is a wonderful story in a lot of ways.
He thinks it's a wonderful story because it is about foremost a beautiful little angelic girl. Everybody has issues. Real rough day for the like trauma, everyone handles trauma differently crowd.
It's so wild because I was watching that being like, wait, like, does he know more?
And I have to say,
when
I was like, wait, when did he do this? Where was he? Like, how did this not blow up bigger? He said this to Nancy Grace, who was sitting in for Larry King. How he didn't become her Scott Peterson of the week. Well, I don't understand.
Yeah.
Like,
it's wild because like, as I was watching that, I was like, if I'm the community, if I'm the press, I definitely would have thought this was the guy.
And maybe they did. I mean, we only have 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So who knows? But it is incredibly. And you're like, why? What is he trying to say here?
And
what is he saying?
And he does fail the polygraph, but like he does, like he's here now. He seems to have gotten himself together in some way because he's like, look, back then I hadn't slept in 5 days. I was delirious. I was hearing voices. I'm
totally
sure all of that is fucking true, but shut up.
His wife said to him after that interview, she said, you fucked the family.
Yes.
Direct quote.
Yes.
So he knew then, he knows now. I understand like trauma does, that was a throwaway joke. Like trauma does like manifest differently in everyone, but it's kind of a bad day for people being like, he said what?
I know.
A beautiful angel. Like, it sounds not great, Bob.
It sounds crazy. The crime scene looks staged. The uncle is crazy. It all is awful. But Officer Cody tells us
their alibis checked out. And with all of the computers we'd seized, emails that we'd looked at, we did not find anything suspicious.
There's no evidence anywhere that the family was ever involved. And of course, we know that they weren't.
And the family's like, okay, great. Thanks for wasting everyone's time and making people not think they had to search for her because we had her buried in the basement.
Exactly.
So now we're wasting time and attention is waning. And like, now what are we going to do?
Yeah.
Because like the dad says, like, they didn't realize the impact they had by doing that.
Right.
By focusing on us. And I'm like, right, we'll get your brother off television, number one.
But it's also like, the longer the person is missing, the way less likely it is you're going to find them. Like, why can't we be doing both at the same time?
I don't understand.
You know?
I don't know. So it's day 9. Mary Catherine, the sister who's 9 years old, is essentially in isolation because they didn't want her talking to anyone that could possibly influence her memory. And I'm like, right, but she's 9 and she's traumatized and she also needs help.
Like, tell me that her parents are with her. You know what I mean?
Right. Like how
you
much
don't have her like in a room somewhere.
Like, what is going on here? Because I don't know. We'll get into more of this later. But now we have to talk about Richard Reese, who is a suspect that the cops are insisting did this.
So Richard Reese was a guy who weirdly looks a little like Christina Ricci. I'm like, is that his uncle? But he was a contractor who worked at the family house.
And they tell us that there was a, quote, conflict with Ed Smart about money. We don't get any further details about that.
The only only other details we do get is that when they search Ricci's house, they found some of the mom's jewelry. I was like, damn, Ricci.
Right. So that's like kind of a, that's like, okay.
Yeah.
He did work on the house a year ago, and but like they, quote, dragged this guy in, their words.
I just wanted to say, I love this cop that's doing this interrogation. When was the last time you were in the fucking house?
Well, the pure, he's like a year ago. The pure disdain on both sides is palpable because this guy is like yelling back at them. He's like, yeah, I didn't do this. And so like Richard Ricci, he's a, quote,
Richard Ricci was a violent felon, that he had actually shot one of my friends on the police force in a pharmacy robbery.
I didn't have the slightest clue that Richard was a felon. He had come recommended from the church employment center. So I was shocked.
He was recommended to them through their the Mormon Church's employment center.
Now, like, listen, I have a friend who used to run a company where he would place ex-convicts. I think that is the most amazing thing in the world. But
100%.
Like, is the church employment center doing background checks on people that they're sending to homes full of children? Mm-hmm. It seems like not.
It seems like not.
So Ed hires this guy, Ricci, gives the guy a car for the amount of work that he's going to be doing for them. And the cops determined that, like, a lot of miles had been put on that car that Ed gave him on the night or the morning after Elizabeth went missing. Like, to the cops, this is kind of the nail in the coffin. Like, he put Elizabeth in a car, he took her somewhere, and he's not telling anybody where she is.
Right. So Richard Ricci refuses to give the cops any information about where he was or why he was there or anything. Like, they don't have any evidence on him.
And also where he was for the 12 hours the night that Elizabeth went missing.
But Mary Catherine says it's not him.
I had been kept away from watching the news. But one day I saw a report on the TV about possible suspects, and a picture of Richard Ricci came up. He had done a lot of work around the house. He had always been very nice. And I just knew it wasn't Richard Ricci that night in my bedroom.
And she saw a report about Richard Ricci, and she's like, that's not him.
No, and the thing is, like, this is what broke my heart for her, one of many things. She describes in painstaking detail that she'd been kept in isolation for weeks and months, not talking to anybody so that she would have a clear mind of who it was and was not. She tells the cops it was not him, and they don't believe her.
They don't listen to her.
So they are torturing her so that she can give them information, but when they don't like the information she's giving, they discount it.
You can't do that.
No.
You can't have it both ways. She needs help, and guess what? Everything she's telling you is right, and you're just ignoring her. She's very confident. She's not saying, I think. It's not like they asked her, is this him? She saw it independently and said, that's not him.
Right. Yeah. So July 24th, 7 weeks after the kidnapping, somebody tries to break into the home of Elizabeth's aunt and uncle. The screen was cut in the bedroom of Elizabeth's 18-year-old cousin. I guess, I don't know if the person came. We don't get any other information about this other than that that happened.
And there were chairs placed outside the window, just like Elizabeth's house.
Yeah.
And the thing, that chair thing wasn't made public.
Right.
So it wasn't a copycat thing or a prank.
And the thing is, Ricci was in prison during this time. And so what's going on here is that the Smart family does not think Ricci is the guy. The cops are determined to say that Ricci is the guy.
Right.
And they're trying to say, but like, it happened again in another home in our family. The guy who you think did it couldn't have done it.
And Mary Catherine's telling you he didn't do it.
Yes.
And so they kind of like torture this guy, and they're so desperate.
So we brought him and his lawyer in and told him, if you will tell us where you were and what you did with the Jeep, if it's anything except homicide or kidnapping, we'll offer you immunity from prosecution.
Okay. The cops are going around every which way. No matter what you did, you're not going to be in trouble unless it's murder. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this guy did something fucking terrible.
And we don't have, I do have to say, like, any confirmation that the steal happened because his lawyer's not here. And Richard Ricci dropped dead after 2 days in custody. He had an aneurysm. So some people are like, is it the stress of being, like, beaten down when you didn't do this? I don't know. We'll never know what he was up to. And part of me wishes that his lawyer would tell us. I know they can't. I know why they can't. I agree with why they can't. But there is part of me that's like, I just wish we knew what he did.
I mean, it's really crazy. Like, it has to be awful because otherwise he would have told them because he would have gotten immunity for whatever it was.
He didn't get that deal yet because he's dead.
But no,
they were offering the deal to him.
They offered the deal and he was considering it.
I mean, it's all weird. They're hyper-focused on this Richard Ricci guy when there's no evidence that he did anything, and their only witness that they have in isolation is screaming that he didn't do it.
And even after he dies, the cops are kind of like, well, I guess we'll never get Elizabeth's kidnapper because he just died. Like, they will not give up the fact that they think this guy's the guy.
It's one of the many ways they failed Elizabeth in this. And Richard Ricci, kind of.
And Mary Catherine. Girl, Momentous is back. This is all about that creatine. And look, let me just tell you, it's February. It's that time of the year where, like, the routine starts to feel routine. You're not as inspired anymore, right?
Right.
That's where Momentous comes in.
Yeah, and, like, I know that supplements, like, trusting them, it really matters because you're taking them all the time. You're taking them every day. And choosing the right one can be kind of confusing. So that's why we trust Momentous, because they are the high-trust brand in a low-trust category, and they have the Momentous standard.
And look, get this. Momentous sources only the highest quality ingredients. They're whey protein comes from grass-fed European dairy cows. Their creatine comes from the purest form of creatine monohydrate. And every formula is made with clinically backed, highly bioavailable nutrients with no fillers and no artificial sweeteners.
Yeah, and if it doesn't meet their standard, the product never hits the shelves.
They're out. It's like, get out of here,
get
product.
Get out is what they're saying.
So fam, right now, Momentous is offering our listeners up to 35% off your first order with promo code TCO.
Head to livemomentous.com and use promo code TCO for up to 35% off your first order.
That's livemomentous.com, promo code TCO. Take that creatine like me, baby. I love it.
You know, and I love how they like instantly go no contact.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Instant. Girl, Home Chef is back. Look, I've got stuff to say, but first let me tell you, people really love it. Home Chef is rated number one by users of other meal kits for quality, convenience, value, taste, and recipe ease.
Well, tell me your story.
So look, they have all different ways you can do this. Like, you can get the kind that you chop and cook. You can get the oven ready. You can get the microwave stuff. I have switched our entire thing to oven ready.
Stop.
It comes, we get three a week. It comes, the food is amazing. You can get, we do high protein and we do under 625 calories per serving.
It's a nice way to split the diff.
Yes.
You're not fully cooking, but it's, you're throwing it in the oven. The house smells nice.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Because we never want to cook. You put all the stuff in the little dish that they give you. You put it in the oven. 30 minutes later, your dinner is ready. No work. And it feels like a home cooked meal.
It's a half cook. We love it.
Exactly.
So easy. But also, if you want to actually, you know, the 30 minute meals like that they have, because sometimes, I don't know, it could be kind of meditative. Like you want to chop the onions.
Some people love that.
But when you don't, they have options for that too.
Totally. And you saved so much money, fam. Home Chef customers are saving an average of $86 per month on groceries. Plus, you don't have to go to the grocery store.
And you have 30 meal options each week.
Yes. I could not choose. It's become my responsibility and my family.
Oh,
and
God.
There's so many good options. I honestly can't choose.
It's a good problem to have.
It's true. So, fam, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 50% off and free shipping for your first box, plus free dessert for life. Go to homechef.com/TCO.
That's homechef.com/TCO for 50% off your first box and free dessert for life.
Homechef.com/TCO. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert, but I'm telling you, you want to because it is the best part of your week.
There you go.
Thank you.
Exactly. So we get this like really heartbreaking moment with Ed Smart saying that like,
I had this dream that Elizabeth came walking back into our life. Oh my God. This is over. She's here and she's okay.
He just knew in his bones that Elizabeth would always come home. He would have dreams about it.
Yeah.
Where, like, she would just appear and it would all be over. As quickly as it started, it would just all be over because she's home.
I will say, there's so many parts of this documentary were hard for me to watch. But, like, that dealing with, like, the dad's grief is just really hard to watch him experience.
It's awful.
You know? But can we go drop some acid with Jared Parkinson?
He's going to tell us about the counterculture in Salt Lake City.
Now, this is where I have all these notes. Like, this is true. Like, I've been to parties in Salt Lake City. I've been to bars. Like because when you think about Salt Lake, you think of it as, like, a dry town where, like, it's all religious.
And this, like, very oppressive Mormon religion.
Yeah.
And, like, they have these underground dance parties and house parties with, like,
booze
and drugs.
Weed, mushroom tea, girl.
I'm like, acid in 2002? Okay.
I know.
So he's bartending at one of these house parties.
Yeah.
And a man walks in with, quote, two ladies. And I'm like, very liberal use of that word.
It's crazy. These women are dressed in fully in white gowns. Their faces are covered with scarves, except for their eyes. And he says the young lady had bluish gray eyes. So it's like clearly two adults and a younger person.
Right. Quick cut to Mary Catherine.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's been 4 months. She's not sleeping. She's racking her brain, trying to remember who did this. And one night, she's trying to, like, get herself to fall asleep. She's reading the Guinness Book of World Records just to, like, lull herself to sleep.
God, that's, like, I just love, what an interesting detail.
I know, what a, like, just, like, anything, like, manuals to appliances, I'm sure, like, anything.
How does that VCR work, Dad?
Like, the poor thing to, like, get her mind off it and, like, try to get some rest, because, like, it's not, whatever. So she's flipping through the pages, and she's trying to fall asleep, and suddenly...
And for some random reason... The name popped into my head, and I knew immediately that's who was in my bedroom, June 2002. That's the man who kidnapped Elizabeth.
This name just pops into her head. It's like she was meditating, almost reading the book.
Yeah.
And this name pops into her head, and she goes, I knew immediately that's who was in my bedroom. Now we're back to Jared at the party.
We don't get the name yet. We're back to dropping acid with Jared at the party. But he says, like, look, Jared is trying to say these people, these, like, the three robed, hooded people looked insane, but it was a time of inclusion, man.
Well, here's
Come
the thing.
Come on and party with us.
It's not that uncommon, because it was a way to rebel against the church, is what he's saying. Because that's, like, your temple clothes.
Yes.
So if you know, like, all the, like, stuff that goes on in the temple, you're, like, not supposed to talk about, but these are the outfits.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is what they're dressed as. So he's like, oh, like, cool party bra, like, let's rebel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he's like, it wasn't that crazy to see people dressed in, like, temple garb.
Yeah.
Well, at these parties.
They invite them in, like, open arms. He's offering them drinks. The fucking guy's like, I can have a drink, but they can't.
And Jared turns to the younger one, and he's like, what's with this clown? Like, why is he so controlling?
Why are you here with him? And then the older, like, the lady of the three says, you can't talk to her.
Like, shuts it down immediately. And Jared's like, whatever, you're all killing my buzz. And he goes back to the party.
Exactly.
So the younger, I want to slow down on this.
This is the moment that, like, took my breath away.
The younger lady was Elizabeth Smart. She's a 14-year-old girl.
After the kidnapping.
Right. As Jared is telling us, they show a photo. And it's two disgusting looking men and a girl all in white, and her face is covered, and you just see her eyes. I stood up and said out loud to Fiona.
Yeah.
I said, oh my God, that's her.
Yes.
And
it's from that party.
And in the Elizabeth Smart reveal in the moment is insane.
It's
unbelievable. Because the doc zooms in on a girl wearing a white scarf. I'm positive it's not her. They wouldn't make her relive that trauma putting the fucking scarf on her face.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can only see her eyes, and they zoom, oh my God, they zoom in on her eyes, and she closes them, and when she opens them, it's Elizabeth Smart.
Yeah.
And I lost
my
shit. I know,
me too. I mean, I really, like, I had, like, a... and even, like, someday somebody will watch this documentary and not know the Elizabeth Smart story and not know she's alive,
right.
And that will be even more effective then. But knowing that she was alive, knowing we were going to hear from her eventually, it is still, like, it
is incredibly effective.
Fucking very well. No, like, documentaries don't take time to do shit like that anymore.
No, that's why I really loved this one, because it's like this, we're kind of getting back to... It's a quality, not quantity situation.
Well, and that's what I was also saying to myself today. The harder it is to watch, the better it is.
And also, where did they get that picture?
I know.
Who had the picture?
I know. I feel
and how'd
like
they find
I've
Jared?
Seen it. You know, I feel like I've seen that picture before.
So now we're with Elizabeth Smart, and we're going to rewind all the way back to day one, and Elizabeth Smart is going to tell us her story.
Yeah. So it's June 5th. You know, it's the night of the abduction. She said,
going into the summer of 2002, I was 14 years old. I was so excited to leave junior high in the past. Just thinking back, it's a lot of happy memories, happy feelings.
She's in a really good, fun place in her life.
It was a really happy time for her.
Yeah.
And then she says, like, this man came in, held a knife to her neck. Everything that Mary Catherine said, he said. Elizabeth is now confirming, don't make a sound, come with me.
Yeah.
He leads her out of the house, through the backyard.
And she has this moment where she was like, I was just kept thinking my parents were going to wake up, but nobody came. Like, that is...
And that's not the first time she'll say something like that.
No, I know. You know, I just this last week, we started letting Daisy stay up 15 minutes after we go to bed. And
tell me more about that.
So we are very early to bed people at our house. We are up very early. We go to bed very early. We knew this moment was going to come, that, like, eventually there was going to come the time that Daisy was going to stay up later than us. Right? We're not quite there yet. Like, we're usually in bed by, like, 8:15, 8:30 with, like, a bedtime of 9 o'clock. Daisy's bedtime is 9. So it usually matches up. But, like, the last couple of days, I've been going to bed at, like, 8, like, going to bed at 8:15. We're also on this thing where, like, Daisy only has a certain amount of time on the iPad every day. Right. So, like, when it runs out, it turns off. She saves 10 minutes so that she can have 10 minutes on the iPad after we go to... That's kind of the ritual that we're working on.
Got it.
And so we go to bed, and, like, so she's got 10 minutes on the iPad, then she puts herself to sleep, which is a brand new thing in our house.
Okay.
But it's fucking scary. It's
what do
like,
you mean?
Well, it's just scary in a couple of ways. Like, Daisy feels really passionate about being the one to lock the door. Like, that's one of her jobs.
Okay.
So she's got to lock the door before we go to bed. So if she doesn't do it, the door's not locked, you know? And, okay. like, and also, like, you know, is this the night she walks out the door to, like, go say hi to the doorman and then walks outside and we never see it? Like, it's just that little bit of like... When you're the parent and you go to bed before your kids, you know your kids are in bed, you know? And so when that is starting to change, it just brings all this up. And it's like, in this moment with Elizabeth, I couldn't stop thinking about how her dad will never forgive himself for being asleep in this moment as she's being walked past the bedroom by a stranger who broke in through a fucking screen in the window.
Right.
Because that's the fear. This documentary is like, so it does such an effective job of showing a family's absolute worst fucking fear coming true.
Right. Well, she's going to be 12, right?
Yeah.
So is this a time where you would say, like, but you have to, like, if you do nothing else,
yeah,
you have to lock the door?
Yeah.
Like, she's 12 years old.
Yeah. I usually will, like, wake up an hour after I go to sleep to, like, pee. So I will always go check or whatever.
Right. And she's always done it.
It's always been done.
Okay.
And she takes, honestly, Daisy takes a lot of pride in doing her chores. So,
great.
Like, she really does it.
Great.
But it's scary. It's like, I mean...
It's terrifying.
So terrifying. And it's, like, I can't imagine being Ed Smart in this moment where, like, you know, your other daughter wakes you up and your kid actually is gone.
Yeah.
You know?
It's terrifying.
Sorry, that'll be my last derailment of, like, going through this with him. It's awful. So Elizabeth describes being taken out into the backyard and into the woods. And, like... This is, you know, before she started talking, there was a moment I described earlier where we see them setting up for her interview and she's sitting there, oh, this is going to make me emotional. And the producer says, shall we start? And she goes, yeah.
Yeah.
And she's not worried about it.
No.
You know, she's not, because she is giving this story to us so generously.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And
on
so,
her terms.
On her terms. Know. And she says,
I asked him if he was going to rape and kill me because I thought that must be what he's going to do. Then I wanted him to do it as close as he could to my house so that my parents could find me. And he just looked at me and he said, I'm not going to rape and kill you yet.
He says, I'm not going to rape and kill you yet.
So they finally get to where he's taking her, and it's this tent in the middle of the woods. And this piece of shit woman who goes by Hephzibah appears. Not her real name, fucking Hephzibah.
It's so, so awful.
And she hugs Elizabeth. She takes her shoes off and starts washing Elizabeth's feet. And she tries to take Elizabeth's pajamas off. And when Elizabeth is like, whoa, I don't think so, she goes, well, either I'm doing it or he's going to come in and rip them off you.
Yeah.
This woman is culpable. She is an abuser.
Oh.
She is horrifying.
Oh, my God.
Her own kids went on Oprah and told the whole fucking story.
They did.
We'll get into it.
Oh, my God.
So I'm not going to do the, like, she must be an abused woman. She has been a fucking abusive nightmare her entire life, this woman.
Yeah, I'll give you this one for sure.
Like, enough.
Yeah. Girl, Rocket Money is back. Look, fam, you know this. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings.
I gotta tell you, I was on it the other day, and in the dashboard, they alert you. They're like, this bill is a little high.
Yes.
You want us to go in and negotiate it for you? And
oh,
I was like,
God.
Oh, yeah. It didn't even occur to me to do that for that particular bill, but they say it on the dashboard.
I got another email the other day, like, oh, high dollar amount transferred from your bank account. This looks unusual. Is this right?
Like
they
heads
are
up.
On it. They've got a tracker on my car, girl.
We do not subscribe. But also, like, not just alerting you to the bad things. It's just a good way to see all of your money and be like,
yes.
Oh, I love using this thing. I'm going to continue to. Or, oh, actually, I don't really use that. I could use that $60
yes.
or whatever it is.
And that dashboard is amazing because it consolidates your checking, savings, loans, and investments into a single dashboard and gives you a clear view of your financial picture. Like, for somebody like me, I really need to see it all in one place.
Exactly. So it's a good place to, like, catch red flags and also just work towards your goals and
yes.
saving money for any number of big things you might want to do in your life.
Who doesn't need more help with that?
I do.
You know what I mean?
I was on it yesterday.
I know, truly.
This is what I'm talking about.
So fam, let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster.
Join at rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
That's rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
rocketmoney.com/obsessed.
Save that money.
Do it. This woman burns everything that Elizabeth is wearing. and gives Elizabeth the same kind of robe that she's wearing so they look exactly alike.
Yeah.
As much as a 14-year-old can look like a piece of shit, evil spawn of Satan.
This part is just so hard to talk about. Like, she says, he comes into the tent, does that thing, I hereby seal you as my wife, blah, blah, blah.
It's a big Mormon thing, being sealed.
Yes.
You know?
I hereby seal you to me as my wife before God and his angels as my witnesses. At that point, I screamed out, no. And he looked at me and he said, if you ever scream out like that again, I will kill you. If it'll help you to not scream out, I can duct tape your mouth shut.
I can put duct tape over your mouth to keep it shut.
The abuse is immediate.
And ongoing every hour for the next 5 months.
Yeah. And he, you know, Elizabeth describes the first time he rapes her. It was terrifying and painful and horrible. And he walks away with this fucking smirk on his face and just like leaves her there in the dirt. And the next day, she wakes up to chains being put on her.
And she's like, I'm not going to run away. You don't have to do that. He says, I know you're not going to run away. I'm just taking temptation out of your reach.
Right.
My mind is just a swirl of, like, you know, the place I go where, like, kids have no power and men being awful and, like...
And women being submissive to men in patriarchal religions, I think cannot be ignored here.
Absolutely. Of like, course. Yeah.
Of course she's not going to... First of all, a 14-year-old, when you're a knife to her neck, like, I get it. But, like, the patriarchal religion cannot be ignored in this situation. Because when she eventually... like, gets him to do something for her. She does right out of the Mormon submissive woman playbook.
Yes, yes.
So she says he looks like Rasputin, like stern, cold face, long hair, disgusting beard, and just like overgrown. Like, he's a dirty, disgusting, evil piece of
absolutely
shit.
Absolutely fucking disgusting.
And he says, you
and
know.
And by the way, I just wanted to interrupt and say, this man, we are told, does not suffer from mental illness. This is not a man who's going through something.
No, this
is an evil, evil fucking person.
The two of them.
Yes.
So his name is Emmanuel David Isaiah. Supposedly, a name in quotes. And she is Hephzibah, Elada, Isaiah, whatever. They have their own set of scriptures. They're pieces of shit.
The absolute scum of the earth.
And so God has told them they have to kidnap 7 young girls, and Elizabeth Smart was the first. Her sister Mary Catherine's on the list. Her cousin Olivia is on the list.
I just love that, like, Elizabeth doesn't say it, but you can see in her eyes, she's like, over my dead fucking body is my sister on your list. What, like, the fuck are you talking about?
But the cousin with the chair outside the door, like, she was on the list too.
She was 18. That stood out to me.
Yeah, I think they are hoping that these young, devout Mormon girls will be submissive like they're taught to be their whole lives. Now, Elizabeth says something here again. I know I'm being hard on the Mormon faith here, but I don't see any other way to be.
Yeah.
Because she says all she knew about sex was to not have it before marriage.
But no one had discussed with me the difference between, like, consensual sex, intimacy versus rape. I felt a lot of shame and I felt like I was filthy. I thought, if my family knew what had happened to me, would they still want me back? Maybe it would be better if nobody ever found me.
She wasn't taught about rape or consent or intimacy or love. Like, not even the good stuff.
Yeah.
Not the bad stuff. Not the good. Just don't have it before marriage or else.
Yeah. I just want to say, as, like, the token parent, like, I understand that those conversations are very hard. And that, like, 14 feels like maybe it's not the right age to yet talk to somebody about rape. Like, that is a very scary thing to navigate.
Uh-huh.
But I just wanted to say that about the rape part of that conversation.
Right. But you know, if you can't have, like, the sex talk with your kids, you probably shouldn't be having kids.
And that's not what I'm saying.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. I hear you.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we learn time and time and time again that, like, when you shield kids from, like, the truths they need to know, they always suffer.
And making something about science and your body evil is so dangerous because they're not talking anything about sex, not even, like, your peers, like, nothing. So, like, for her to be now going through this daily sexual assault, she's feeling like her family, like, she's worthless, like, her, like, she's in trouble now.
Yes. Like, she says at some point, like, her family, right here, she says her family wouldn't even want her back.
Maybe it's better if they don't find me.
Yes.
If you can't have a normal sex talk with your kids, you shouldn't be having children. That's number one. And if a belief system is going to shame people for abuse before the abuse even happens, that's disgusting in my book.
I agree. And I was thinking too, and I have absolutely no information on this, so I don't want to speculate, but it just occurred to me, Were the Smarts, like the dad, even more devout because he was gay and not like being honest about who he was?
I don't know. If I was a betting man,
yeah.
If I was a betting gal, I'd think a little bit. I think a lot of that has to do with your own, when you're so devout in some ways, in ways that can be damaging.
Yeah.
I think it's because you're repressing something. Perhaps maybe there's a percentage of people where that would be the case.
I agree.
So it's day 8. This guy is bringing back Elizabeth's own missing posters to the mountain tent.
And saying the whole of Salt Lake is looking for you, but they will never find you because I have you.
And there's this awful story where I was like, I need a break.
I know.
One day, I remember just all of a sudden very faintly hearing my name. Emmanuel took me inside the tent, pulled out his knife. If anyone comes into this camp, this is the knife I'm going to use to kill them, and it'll be your fault.
This is the knife I'm going to kill them with, and it will be your fault.
And also, anything she does, quote, wrong in his and hers crazy fucking mind, these two, she's being punished by being raped.
And food withheld.
And food withheld. So she's being starved. She's being sleep deprived. She's being raped. And the entire time she's thinking that she's in trouble for it. So when you're a child and you're abused and manipulated like this, it's going to be hard to say, oh, is there a cop around? I'm just going to start screaming.
Right.
Now, Elizabeth, specifically on top of that, she thinks she's in trouble because she's been told that if this happens, you are worthless.
Yeah. It's so interesting hearing it from her mouth because she never says this, but like you get the sense from her that she had somewhere in her soul that she was like, fuck this guy. I'm going to survive this. I'm going to get away from this guy.
And I think because she talks about like the power and control and humiliation, she says every day he'd find a way to humiliate her, like walking her like a dog on a leash and like forcing her to drink until she threw up and like all this horrible, horrible shit. And the piece of shit woman by his side is encouraging every step of the abuse. Every bit of it.
Elizabeth is saying that after he would rape her, he would pray for 45 minutes, use God to justify what he did. It's just so. Yes.
But like to your point, like she is keeping herself motivated to survive by thinking that she has this other life that she really wants to get back to, even though she's scared that she'll be rejected for what is happening to her against her will.
And I think that somewhere in there, too, she's like, no way are you fucking taking my sister.
Right.
You know?
Well, speaking of Mary Catherine, let's go back. It's October 12th. Elizabeth has been missing for 4 months. We're back to the moment where she realized the name of who did this.
Lois and I had gone out for the evening. And when we got home, Mary Catherine said, I think I know who it is. And she said, it was Emmanuel. And I went, Emmanuel?
I know who did this. It was that fucking creep, Emmanuel. Remember, Elizabeth just told us the name of the man abusing her is Emmanuel David Isaiah.
Now, we get this crazy story.
I'm like, how do they know him?
I know.
How does Mary Catherine know this name?
Well, Ed, the dad, tells us the story. And this is a story about the mom. The mom is not here.
Right.
But the previous year, says Ed, Lois had gone downtown, saw an unhoused person, quote, preaching the good word.
So he's also a Mormon.
Yes.
He worked in the temple.
Yeah. Lois sees this guy preaching the good word, like on the street somewhere. And she goes up to him and says, if you need work, here's my husband's card.
I understand wanting to do a nice thing for somebody.
Yes.
I totally get it. I just don't know if inviting a street preacher into your home with 6 children is the way to do it.
And like, I understand that you have to hire workers or whatever. Like, I understand that like people need to come in and out of your home. I'm not like, I have people come in and out of my house. I understand that. But this guy ended up like kidnapping and raping and almost killing Elizabeth Smart. So like, can we learn a lesson here?
So this guy calls, like takes Lois up on it and calls Ed Smart, and he does work on the house. So he knew the house.
Yes.
He knew Elizabeth. He knew Mary Catherine, and Mary Catherine knew him because she was right. And she described him and this whole situation perfectly.
Yeah. And the police are like, they're not buying it. They're like,
I mean, I was not convinced. Emmanuel had not appeared on any of the lists of people we were investigating. He was there for about 3 hours one day and then didn't even come back to get paid. But we began to follow it up.
This guy was only there for a couple hours. He never even came back to get paid. Now, here's my thing. I feel like that makes Mary Catherine's account more credible because she barely remembers him.
They say her memory, quite frankly, came under disbelief by the investigators. I'm like, well, that, quite frankly, makes me want to scream because either she's valuable to you or not. And now I'm spitting everywhere.
I know.
Is she valuable to you or not?
And also, if you're not going to listen to her, can you stop torturing her? But also, the fact that it took her that long to remember makes it seem like somebody who was just there briefly. Doesn't that add to the credibility of her story?
Right. And Richard Reese clearly didn't do it. So, like, we got to look at somebody else. And this guy is, like, a known crazy. He's, like, the crazy guy downtown. Everybody knew him in town.
Right.
He was, oh, there he goes again. And so, like, this is a connection here. She has a name.
Well, it gets worse because they bring in a sketch artist. They make a sketch. And the family wants to release the sketch to the public. The cops say no.
Because they're following up on this lead almost begrudgingly. The yeah. vibe from the cops then and today is like, well, we didn't have anything else to do.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I'm like, Reese died, so.
And I'm like, Mary Catherine is right every step of the way. You yeah. can't, every time she says something, you don't take her seriously. You can't have it both ways.
Yes.
It's impossible.
Yes, I agree. So the cops refuse to release the sketch.
They don't want to, quote, scare him away.
We're back with Elizabeth, who says that Emmanuel and Hepzibah got into a huge fight because he keeps going into town and having, like, pizza and mm-hmm. not bringing food back for them.
So they end up going into Salt Lake, which is great for Elizabeth.
It's great. But, like, then she gives us this explanation of, like, being back in Salt Lake for the first time since she was kidnapped. It's been months. And she's like, I know this place. This place should feel safe to me. But she's like, it was like looking at it through somebody else's body.
Yeah. And she also says, she goes, you know, she's in the white robe. Her face is covered. She only has her eyes to communicate with. And she says, honestly, we looked crazy. Like,
yes.
I probably wouldn't stop and look at us for too
yeah,
long either.
Because as they're coming down the mountain, joggers are going by them and not stopping, which is like, of course, that makes total sense.
She's like, I totally get it. We looked crazy.
So they go to the library to look up maps or whatever. And like, this is just, I 100% understand why Elizabeth did what she did, but just watching it, your heart just breaks.
This cop, okay.
Yeah.
They're approached by a cop because he wants to ask questions about Elizabeth Smart.
Remember, they're fully covered in the robes and the scarves. And the cop can't see what the women look like.
And so he wants to see their full faces.
I just need to make sure that this girl is not this girl that we're looking for. Can I see her face? Emmanuel is like, I'm sorry, but no, like that would be against our faith. That would be against our religion.
This piece of shit loser hides behind religious freedom,
yes.
uses it for evil, and it works. Because he tells the cop, this is against my religion. Only her future husband and me, her father, can see her face. But also, hey, cop, could you demand to see some ID? Could you say, all right, sue me. Good
yeah.
luck suing me.
Yeah.
And rip that thing off when everyone's looking for Elizabeth Smart. Like, do what she would do if they weren't white.
Yeah.
Could you treat them like they weren't white and maybe ask a question when she, like, are you kidding?
I totally am with you, but I also wonder, like, what you were saying before, like, are there just a bunch of people who look like this wandering around Salt Lake? You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Does it get to a point where you're just so tired of seeing people?
Right.
You know, like.
And it's been she's missing for 4 months, the entire
Salt
community.
Lake, I love you. I've spent a lot of time. This is no aspersion against Salt Lake, but I'm just wondering, like, if there's a lot of people, because otherwise that the cops should be in prison.
Like, I don't understand why it was just like, well, okay.
Yeah, I know.
Dare him to sue you.
Right.
Treat him if they weren't white. What would happen? What would you do if it was like a Muslim family?
Oh,
do
God.
That. So, but regardless, nothing happens. They're like,
yeah.
okay, like have a great time looking at your maps, everybody. But
yeah.
this scares the piece of shit loser because SLC is too hot now. Salt Lake City's too hot.
Yeah. They drag him back up into the mountains. And, you know, and Elizabeth is thinking, like the Emmanuel's very anxious. And she's like, that was maybe my one shot. Like, am I never going to see my
family? She knows
again?
It's bad because
yeah.
she's like, we're back in the mountains. He's probably never going to go back to Salt Lake City again. And I'm just going to be taken further away from my family.
Yeah.
And so it's 6 months and everyone but the family is starting to give up. And these assholes in church with an earshot of Ed Smart are like, can you believe he still thinks she's alive? Can we not?
I know.
And can we not in church an earshot of Ed?
I know. And the cops, once again, now that this Reese guy is dead, like they think that he's the guy. And so like, they're just never going to, like the cops are slowly like winding down their investigation.
And he died months ago.
Yes.
We're 8 months into this thing now. It's February of 2003.
Well, the family's got one ace up their sleeve to reignite this investigation.
This is 8 months. We've never crossed the police on anything, even though many reasons why we could have been mad. But we weren't going to just leave it to the authorities. This is the biggest lead we have.
Now, we've got breaking news on the Elizabeth Smart abduction case.
And so we released the sketch.
They've got the sketch, they hold a press conference, they say fuck you to the cops, and they release it.
That's a really big move.
Yes, and Ed says, we never ever went against the cops, but like, it was now or never.
Now's the time. And guess what? They get the sketch is out for 2 seconds. Who calls but this piece of shit's brother-in-law?
This guy calls Ed's brother. I think that guy's my brother-in-law. He's got a teepee up in the mountains, but he's never let the family know where it is.
It's some secret place in the mountains. He goes, I saw the picture. There, chills went down my spine. He said, if I'm right and this is my brother-in-law, there's a really good chance that Elizabeth is
still alive.
And so Emmanuel is Brian David Mitchell, the local fucking crackpot downtown.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who this guy is. I don't understand it.
Right. And so the cops search his name, and it turns, now we didn't even get this story before, but this guy's been forcing Elizabeth to drink beer until she passes out.
Yeah.
He got arrested for stealing beer from Albertsons, and the cops had taken a picture of him during his arrest.
And we see it, and there he is, Rasputin.
There he is, like, in his fundamentalist garb that he's been wearing walking through town with Elizabeth for the last 2 months.
He's doing fundamentalist preacher cosplay. And so, but this is happening while Elizabeth was with him. So the cops had him and let him go.
Yes.
Now, this guy really is, like, I know, I'm not saying that as a joke. He's known around town as, like, that crazy preacher.
Yes.
On so-and-so corner with, like, that weird lady who carries a doll. Everyone knows who these two are.
The carries the doll, it hit me in such a creepy place. That was the scariest thing I've heard.
These three, the pieces of shit and Elizabeth, have been out in the world downtown doing things in plain sight for months.
Yes.
4 months.
Well, we learn about this fucking woman.
They had traveled extensively together on foot around the United States, preaching the gospel as they interpreted it. He believed himself to be a prophet of God. In the last few years, he seemed to be spinning into a violent state of mind.
He seemed to be spiraling into a violent state of mind, which is like, can we go find him now?
Yeah. Well, his ex-wife calls and she says, oh, he was incredibly dangerous and sadistic. And then we get this horrible story about how this woman had like a very big fear of mice, right?
Yes.
So this piece of shit kills a bunch of mice and then put them in the oven without telling her. So then when she opened the oven, she's terrified and destabilized and like her biggest fear is there.
Oh my God.
Also, to the shock of nobody, he had a history of sexually abusing children.
Yeah. This
he's a fucking pedophile.
He's a known pedophile.
And Wanda has, whatever her fucking name is, is encouraging all of the sexual abuse and all of the abuse. All of it.
It's just unconscionable.
And then...
But get him on your roster, Mormon Church, of, like, people to hire out, I guess.
Working in the temple.
And also, one quick background check would have seen that.
But the question is, like, what is going on here? Because why would you not be like, hey, you can hire anyone else but him?
The background check thing for me just seems so easy. If you're going to have, like, a...
In 2002. This isn't the 1600s.
Right. Although the names would make more sense.
You should be able to. Yeah. You have a ton of money, Mormon Church. You're super rich. Like, use those resources.
But so now that we've got a picture of him, he had been spotted at a place called Super Salad. And
it's a buffet restaurant.
It is?
Yeah.
It made me hungry. I want soup and salad. The brother takes a picture in there, and the waitress is like, we saw
That's
this guy,
her.
And I think we saw Elizabeth.
Elizabeth was there. So Ed Smart says, like, much to the cops' chagrin, he's like, the public was our greatest resource. They had a lot of credible sightings come in because they're, like, riding the bus.
Yes.
They're at Super Salad. Well, they're at the library. They're everywhere.
And it's telling him that she's out there and she's alive.
Right.
Like, we still have a chance to find her.
But the thing is, the last credible sighting was in October and now it's March.
Well, so now it's March 2003. It's 9 months. This poor fucking girl has been living with this crazy man and this crazy woman for 9 months. They're in a little town outside of San Diego. And Elizabeth is like, Elizabeth has this thing where she says, being raped by him was horrific, but I had to wonder if having to listen to him wasn't worse.
Because just being berated with this bullshit of being God and submission. Imagine all the shit he was saying and all the awful things he was saying about everyone who's not him.
And
you know
just
I mean?
Have to sit there and listen to it.
But Elizabeth, and I think this is part of her devout Mormon upbringing, learned how to manipulate him.
Yes.
Because she convinces him to go back to Salt Lake City. She's like,
I have this feeling. I think we might be supposed to return to Salt Lake. And I know God wouldn't really speak to me, but I know if you were to ask him, he would confirm to you whether or not that was the right path, because you truly are his servant and you truly are his prophet.
You're definitely a prophet and you're definitely God. What are your thoughts on Salt Lake City?
Because he was talking about taking them to like Chicago or New York. And she was like, if I go away from the West Coast, I'm never coming back.
And he is so distracted by the ego boosting where he's yes. like, you're totally right. God is telling me Salt Lake City. It fucking works. It works.
It's unbelievable. Elizabeth Smart is living up to her last name.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what I mean?
So they're back in Salt Lake and she's getting spotted immediately. The calls come flooding in.
They get off the bus and not 1 minute later you hear the 911. Hi, who do I call if I see that Emmanuel everybody's looking for?
Yeah, Victor, Sergeant Victor's here and he hears the call comes in. The cop cars show up to where they are. They pull up next to them like 15 cars around
Victor,
them.
Your time to shine, girl. Do not let us down here.
Elizabeth Smart is in a quote, horrible wig.
I mean, does Victor know a good drag queen when he sees one? Because he's like, this wig sucks.
And it's like, do you really think this is going to work? It's going to make everyone look at her more.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly.
It's going to make it so obvious.
But this is what is so heartbreaking because everyone is hoping it's Elizabeth. They separate Elizabeth and the other two. And he is saying to her.
And I says, just for the sake of this nation and for your family, just tell me you're Elizabeth. And she looked at me and said, thou say it. And I've never heard those words in my life. But I says, I'll take that as a yes. And we put her in the back of Officer Jones's police car.
For the sake of this family and the sake of this nation, tell me you're Elizabeth
and,
Victor.
And she says, she's like, this was it. This yeah. was the moment.
Because she was saying, like, my captors, she keeps calling them her captors. My captors are right there. And we've seen this happen where the cops turn the victim back over to the murderer.
Did it with Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy, Jeffrey Dahmer. Mm-hmm. It happens all the time.
And try to imagine the absolute heinous abuse every day for 9 months.
Yes.
So she says, I need to give the safest answer I could possibly give because she doesn't know what he's going to do, what he's capable of. And it's been 9 months and no one has helped her.
Yeah.
So for whatever reason, he needs Elizabeth to say it herself.
Right.
Like these people are wrapping themselves in religious freedom and not like rip that fucking thing off her face. You know,
it's
her.
I know.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Like normally I wouldn't be saying this.
Be the hero, Victor. Be the fucking hero, Victor.
And he says like, you need to tell me that you're Elizabeth. And she says, thou sayest. And he's like, I don't know what it means, but I'm pretty sure that means that I'm Elizabeth.
I'm gonna take it as a yes. I know. And he puts her in the back of the car and she starts to cry. Now, Ed, the dad, gets the call. Somebody is like, do not pass go, Ed. Get in your fucking car and get down
right
to the police station.
And they're not sure it's Elizabeth. And I'm like, we can still help the traumatized girl, though,
absolutely.
Right? Whether it's Elizabeth or not,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he describes, this actually made me cry. He gets down to the police station. He walks in. He says, there's a row of officers at attention. All of these cops are like lined up at attention. And as he's walking down the row, they're saying, God bless you, Mr. Smart. We hope everything works out okay. I'm sobbing. Ed says he gets to the end of the line. He sees Corden Sparks, the detective, and he's like, I think we've got her. He opens the door and he says, and I quote, there is this young woman sitting on the sofa. Now it cuts to her. We see her. And he says, it's not the young woman who left me 9 months ago. She was a young girl. And yet here was this young woman. And he said her face was sunburned and swollen. Her hair was pulled back in braids. Oh my God. He says, and I held my miracle in my arms.
Yeah, and we see it.
I can't even.
And Elizabeth is shocked because she says to us,
it took me a minute to respond because, I mean, I thought I was in trouble. But finally, my dad was there and he was going to protect me. And no matter what happened, he wasn't going to abandon me and it was going to be okay.
Finally, my dad was there. He wasn't going to abandon me. It was going to be okay. She had it on a loop in her head.
Yeah.
I'm going to survive with the hopes that my family will love me still.
I love that she hugs him for 5 seconds and then she pulls back and she goes, Dad, you okay?
Like
you know what I mean? I know. Like, can we all talk about it all now?
I know.
Please, you know?
In 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But she says, like, she said, those monsters could never take away my value or my worth. And it breaks my heart that she needed to convince herself of that for
yes.
all this time, you know?
Yes.
So
yes.
She was gone for 280 days. Mary Catherine is rightfully being called a hero. They
Thank
both
God.
Are.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that MK, sorry, can I call you MK, Mary Catherine?
I've been calling her MK in my notes.
Me too. One of my best friends from high school is named Mary Kate and I, Mary Catherine. but we call her MK or Mary Kate. But anyway, I'm so glad she's being acknowledged in this way, because like that was a torturous 280 days for her too.
Well,
and she was right the whole time.
Yes, but also like the guilt that she feels on top of it for like, quote, not stopping the kidnapping.
Or the survivor's guilt or whatever.
Yes.
So we got to talk about the piece of shit losers.
Yeah.
The ranting and raving, the singing, the quote preaching.
I got to tell you, we're with Officer Corden again, and he's the one that's screaming at everybody. And I always love it when he's just like, this fucking piece of shit lunatic is like.
He would launch into a spiel.
And I am the servant of the Lord.
No.
I've only done what I've been commanded to do.
I found him very crafty.
Get thee behind me, Satan. Get thee behind me, Satan.
I'm not Satan, and I'm right here.
Get thee behind me, Satan.
Screaming about like, Satan, get thee behind me, Satan. And you hear Corden go, I am not Satan. I am Corden.
No,
I'm standing in
front
of
you. You're a disgusting, abusive pedophile hiding behind religion. Stop.
It's disgusting.
Stop it. So the trial gets delayed for years. Years and years. Every trick in the book.
Because he's claiming mental illness and it's just getting delayed and delayed.
But Elizabeth is using that time to start to heal and work through her trauma. And she's like, I was scared of men. I was scared of a lot of things.
And she's saying also, I never heard anybody speak about rape, you know, in like all my life, you know, like it was something that she'd experienced. She never heard anybody talking about it. So this makes her feel the shame that she's been talking
about.
And she
said like she felt a lot of shame and embarrassment. And I'm like, because that's what she was taught to feel.
Yes.
So she blamed herself. Why didn't she run? Why didn't she scream? Like, we know that. We know why.
Yes.
But like Elizabeth had to come to that herself, of course. And she's like, what is even normal now? Like, I'm home, but like, what do I do? What's normal? Like, how do I go to sleep? Like, what do I?
She wakes up with her parents. She's like, I live in Daisy's room now.
I know.
You know?
So it's November 10th, 2010. The trial finally, after like 8 years.
Yes.
And she testifies against these pieces of shit.
Yeah. And she's like, I didn't want to do that, but if that's what it was going to take to make this be over, she does. And like, it's not over. We get on-screen text before the documentary is over. But Brian David Mitchell was found guilty of kidnapping and transporting a minor across state lines for sexual activity. He gets life in prison without parole. Wanda, charged with the same stuff. She gets 15 years. She was released in 2018.
Let me give you a couple of notes. She's on the sex offender list for life.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God for that. In 2010, four of her adult kids went on Oprah.
What'd they say?
They said, here's the pull quote. Look it up. It's all there. The article is there on Oprah.com still. Like, look it up. It's there. But one of them said, I think the media portrayed my mother as being a victim. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to come on the show is to expose her for the monster she is.
Oh, shit.
I mean, physical abuse, emotional, animal abuse, sexual grooming, like really bad.
Were they adult children by the time Elizabeth Smart happened?
Well, this is like 10 years. I mean, this was in 2010.
Okay.
So that was 8 years. So by the time 8 years, you know, they're all in their 20s or whatever.
I'm just wondering like where her kids were when she was like living in the woods with.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But like, it's all, you know, it's all online to look at. And like, they were actually like, I said that they were part of the LDS church working in the temple, which is like, okay. But in May, 2025, she was arrested because she can't go to parks because she's a fucking sex offender.
Oh shit.
So she was caught going to two parks. She's forbidden to do that. And she said she was, quote, commanded by the Lord to go to the park, and nothing happened. She was just like hauled in. There was a hearing. No formal charges are going to be like, nothing. Like, she should get a fine. She should get a year in prison, but like, none of that's going to happen. So she's just out among us. Beware of your kids and everyone in Salt Lake City, because she's still there. Look her up. She's on the sex offender registry for life, as she should be. But for her to only get that amount of time for being so
complicit.
Yes.
Yes.
And so like important to that, like she was abusing her own kids. They would like make them pray for hours and hours and then be like, hey, look at this porn on the bed.
No.
And the son is like, it was almost like they wanted to participate. Like, they wanted the kids to participate in sex with the parent. Like, fucking awful.
Oh,
she's a nightmare of a person.
God.
So don't give me the like, she's a victim too. No. She was abusive since day one.
So we learn Elizabeth is married. She's got a family. She began speaking publicly about what happened.
I just felt like it needs to serve a purpose. It needs to bring some good in the world. I wanted survivors to know that they had nothing to be ashamed of. I wanted them to know they weren't alone, that there were other people in this world who have experienced it and who can understand.
She says it needs to do some good in the world. And like, we've seen it. Like, we've seen what she's been doing.
We did with that documentary where like she was the host of it.
Yeah. And like, she's out in the world, like making other women who've been through similar things feel less alone, making them feel understood and seen.
Yeah. She started the Elizabeth Smart Foundation. You should donate if you can. I did.
Yes.
So it ends with, you know, go to wantotalkaboutit.com if you or someone you know has experienced sexual abuse. But it ends with Mary Catherine and Elizabeth and her dad sort of trying to have like a cute, quote, like normal moment as Elizabeth is talking about that. But no one really mentions Lois or the brothers
at all. We don't know. We don't know. Do you know anything?
I just know that like when they divorce and that allegedly they're not speaking.
Yeah.
So I wonder, not to be like part of the problem, but I wonder if like teams have formed.
Probably.
Like it could very well be like, I don't want to discuss this, or this is Elizabeth's time to tell her story, and too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, I understand that, but I think the mother was like truly devastated in a way that she can't come back from.
I mean, think about all they went through, like, not just like the Elizabeth Smart tragedy, which is horrible, but then a divorce, then also realizing that like the husband is gay, then also him leaving the church. Like, you know, like that's a lot for a fucking family to go through.
Yeah.
So,
and like the coming out and divorce happened like
at the same time.
At the same time. Like one because of the
other. Well, we are sending love and hugs to the whole Smart family.
Oh my God.
Girl, we did Elizabeth Smart.
Kidnapped Elizabeth Smart. Yeah.
What are we doing next?
We are doing Hunting Phil Spector, another piece of shit.
Oh,
amazing
my God.
Music, piece of shit guy. But this is part of the Homicide Los Angeles series on Netflix.
Oh, great.
There's like an 8-part Phil Spector thing
doing this. We're going to do that.
Yeah.
Join the Facebook group. Join us over on Patreon, but only if you want more fun ad-free bonus episodes.
Only.
That's the only way you're allowed to join.
Everyone's invited, but you have to be down for
the
fun.
For the fun. You have to enjoy fun.
Okay.
Then we love you.
We love you.
All right,
please
bye.
Please stay safe.
Yeah,
bye. We love you.
Waiting at the Alhambra Police Department, in custody, was Phil Spector.
I knew from the phone call from my lieutenant that he was a very wealthy music producer.
Me personally, I never heard of him.
Spector's style is often credited with changing how we hear pop music.
This case was going to be what I call red ball. A case that's going to draw a lot of attention, and you have to recognize that going in. And I think we all did.
This is murder. There's no more serious crime.
It boils down to a passion and a sense of duty.
Justice comes from finding the truth.